This is KFSK's Midday Magazine for Monday, September the 26th. I'm Angela Denning. Searchers found the body of a missing Sitka man on Mount Verstovia Friday afternoon. 37-year-old Michael Hansen was last seen on Monday, September 19th, at 3:20 in the afternoon, descending the trail from the summit of the mountain. Searchers were looking for him all week and found his body at 4:30 p.m. Friday. Alaska State Troopers report that it appears Hansen died in a fall while hiking back down the mountain. The Sitka Search and Rescue Team, Sea Dogs, U.S. Coast Guard, and U.S. Forest Service were involved in the search effort, along with numerous volunteers. Alaska State Troopers have identified the hunting guide involved in Thursday's Admiralty Island bear mauling as 63-year-old Laverne Beyer of Juneau. Authorities say Beyer, a big game hunting guide, was with client Douglas Adkins of Jenkins, Kentucky, on Thursday evening on Admiralty Island near Angoon. They startled a brown bear on the beach, which led to a brief attack on Adkins, who the Coast Guard flew to Juneau early Friday for medical treatment for injuries that were not life-threatening. Beyer did not return messages left on Friday requesting comment. In 2007, Alaska Department of Fish and Game Information Officer Riley Woodford profiled Beyer in a department news magazine. At the time, Woodford identified Beyer as a fish and game researcher who may have been, quote, the most avid bear trapper in Alaska. Woodford wrote he had handled almost 800 bears after 35 years of snaring, darting, and capturing bears, and survived 4 bear attacks. The Alaska Department of Commerce lists Beyer's big game guiding license as under probation since 2013. State employee directories list Beyer as a current fish and game employee. Business and community leaders in Southeast Alaska are looking into how other ferry systems are operated around the world and a different way of managing Alaska's ferries. The annual meeting of Southeast Conference in Petersburg last week focused on the first steps of a project to reform the state ferry system, find efficiencies, and keep ferries running between coastal communities despite the state's budget crisis. Joe Vicnicki reports.
The Seattle engineering firm hired by Southeast Conference is making comparisons with other ferry systems from British Columbia to New York, Scotland, and Norway. Elliott Bay Design Group is considering a range of options from private companies to public authorities to public-private combinations. The firm's John Waterhouse presented findings to the annual meeting of Southeast Conference. He explained that because of its scale, funding, and vessels, the Alaska Marine Highway is unique.
So what works for some others because of their scale, their routes, their economics, may not work for a marine highway system as a one-for-one match, but are there lessons we can learn?
The company has been hired to look into possible reforms for Alaska ferries and is considering different public and private corporations and authorities that are already operating in the state. Those include the Alaska Railroad, a state corporation, or the Ketchikan Shipyard, owned by the Alaska Industrial Development and Export Authority, but operated by a private company. The consultants thought state ferries could continue on in their current configuration as an agency of the state, but Elliott Bay is recommending several changes if that system is kept. Those are forward funding for the ferry system budget, transferring ferry system human resources from the Department of Administration to the Marine Highway, and looking into other ways to boost revenue. The company held a summit and listening session in Anchorage in August, looking at the role of the Marine Highway and starting to draft a new mission statement. Waterhouse explained the goal of trying to figure out what are core services of the system.
This is truly the moment for Alaska to take that step back and look at refreshing the whole relationship with its ferry system and creating the next, what I like to think of as the next 50 years of that system's history.
Southeast Conference was formed in 1958 to lobby for creation of a ferry system for Southeast. Now the group is working with the state on its reforms. The state this year signed an agreement with the regional organization to look for solutions to a system that has an aging fleet, turnover of leadership with each new administration, and a state budget crisis among its challenges. Department of Transportation Deputy Commissioner Mike Neusel said the Marine Highway saw a drop in revenue in the past fiscal year of just under 13%, or around $12 million.
I hear the word crisis a lot. I would like to not say that the Alaska Marine Highway System is in crisis. That's not good from a marketing perspective. It's not good for business. We have a severe financial challenge, and that's the issue that we need to deal with, is the financial sustainability of this system.
Neusel said the ferry system cut spending more than $15.5 million, or around 10%. That's led to reduced service and taking boats offline, which means fewer passengers and fewer vehicles traveling on the ferries. Alaska's ferry system costs around $150 to $160 million a year to operate. It transports about 300,000 people and about 100,000 vehicles each year. In his keynote speech to the group, Lieutenant Governor Byron Mallott reminded Southeast Conference of the importance of transportation connections for Alaskans no matter where they live.
Among the communities served are the smallest and most fragile in Alaska. And to be very blunt, some communities that are very different from other communities in our state. I submit to you that if the work you do does not meet those communities' needs, you'll have failed. Simple as that.
Southeast Conference members from around the region voiced frustration with a history of changing directions with planning for the Marine Highway. Joseph Reeves with the Ketchikan Indian community was concerned with the loss of jobs with service reductions.
We don't have very many job opportunities in Southeast Alaska. Our fishing is failing, our logging is failing. Now our Ferry Institute, which is a major drive for major employment in Southeast Alaska, is going to be reduced. How is that going to help our economy in Southeast Alaska, where everyone else thrives? And I take offense at this administration, and it's not just this administration, every administration that's come before you, continuing to attack our road systems.
Reeves said cutting service and cutting jobs did not make sense to him. With heavy fog in the area and a fall storm bearing down on the region, people hoping to get out of town after the meeting were informed that the Ferry Columbia was stopping in Petersburg that week on its way south. And Myrna Gardner of the Central Council of Tlingit and Haida Indian Tribes of Alaska highlighted that important transportation option.
What I ask of the steering committee is that when you're discussing models, that you always remember that the heart and purpose is to provide our citizens with safe, reliable transportation on a consistent basis.
Others commenting expressed frustration with scheduling decisions. Sitka Mayor Mim McConnell said the system is not working for her, and she said she'd love to use the ferry again. She also thought use has dropped in her town.
In Sitka, we've grown accustomed now to not having an adequate ferry service, so we've moved on to doing other things, getting to where we need to go other ways, because we know that it probably isn't going to be traveling on a day that we need it, because it's just not frequent enough.
McConnell wanted the consultants not to put too much stock in recent ridership numbers and assume that that was the level of demand in Southeast communities. Ultimately, the group hopes to make decisions on what constitutes basic service offered by the ferries and what routes and offerings could be cut from the system. Some pointed out the impact that those kind of decisions have on ferry customers. Juneau Assembly member Debbie White has a real estate company that operates in the northern part of the panhandle. She explained that people bought homes in Haines with the idea of commuting and working in Juneau for part of the week based on a day boat schedule for Lynn Canal.
They made investment decisions, home buying decisions, based upon that schedule. When those ferries got pulled, they ended up selling those homes, and actually some of those people left Alaska. So just don't forget that you're playing with people's lives.
Southeast Conference staffers cautioned people about directing their frustration toward the group's steering committee or the consultants hired by the organization. Executive Director Shelley Wright reminded the group that it was a decision they would be making together, and the organization's Robert Venables called it an historic opportunity.
I don't know if this is the first time ever. It's the only time I can think of where an administration, such as the Walker-Lott administration, comes to an organization and says, we want somebody outside of government to take the lead on analyzing and coming up with a solution. And they've turned to Alaskans across the state and said, okay, Southeast Conference, lead this initiative, this statewide initiative, and bring us the recommendations and an action plan.
The steering committee is drafting a new mission statement for the ferry system and will be meeting again this fall to approve that and also come up with a recommendation for a new governance structure. The hope is to bring that recommendation to the state legislature for the upcoming session. A second phase of the work will be looking at a business and operating plan. Southeast Conference plans to put in $100,000 for the reform project and has raised about $66,000 of that. The state is contributing $250,000 to the project. In Petersburg, I'm Joe Vicknicki.
A consultant's plan released this month recommends that Sitka's two hospitals combine operations. The municipally owned Sitka Community Hospital and the Southeast Alaska Regional Health Consortium's Mount Edgecombe Hospital currently compete, but both agreed earlier this year to hire a consultant to examine options for survival in the face of financial and other challenges. ECG Management Consultants, a large Lower 48 healthcare management company, came up with three options. Sitka Community Hospital CEO Rob Allen says one is no change, but the consultant says that could put the hospitals, their employees, and patients at risk because it wouldn't address financial problems.
The second one is to do some type of joint operating agreement and collaborate at a lower level, you know, we're looking at maybe clinics or OB, cooperate in some areas that would work for both entities but still continue competing in other areas.
A summary letter released by both hospitals says this option would consolidate clinical and administrative services and create a shared workforce. Allen says the final preferred option would require the most change.
The third is to do some type of new entity that has joint governance from both sides and that would take over kind of the management of both facilities and some of the operations here.
The letter says the plan would save money by reducing duplicate equipment. It says integration would streamline both operations and make it easier to recruit specialists and expand services. Allen says the hospitals are trying to plan for reduced government funding, as well as an aging population needing more health options.
It's looking at, you know, the higher reimbursements rates that are available, doing away with some duplication, and increasing the options for healthcare. You know, if you have some of those resources available to focus in other ways, and trying to keep more people here getting their healthcare.
The plan needs to be approved by CERCH and the community's hospital boards, as well as the Sitka Assembly. CERCH officials wouldn't comment in detail until after their board meeting. With coastlines eroding, temperatures rising, and sea ice retreating, Alaska is feeling the effects of a warming planet. But a new federal report suggests so far fisheries in the state haven't experienced many observable impacts of climate change. From Alaska's Energy Desk, Zoe Sobel has more from UnAlaska.
Commercial fishing in Alaska is a multi-billion dollar industry. For 18 consecutive years, fishermen have hauled more fish into Dutch Harbor than anywhere else in the country. But at this point, researcher Terry Johnson says climate change isn't a hot topic in the industry.
Now, we're not talking about next year, but we're talking about within this century or within the working lives of young people who are just coming into the fishery now.
Johnson says interest in the topic is growing among fishermen. He isn't a biologist. As a researcher for Sea Grant, an offshoot of the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration, he synthesized hundreds of scientific papers, interviewed scientists and stakeholders, and combed through popular media to compile this report. Johnson says climate change will have different effects on different fisheries. Some fish like salmon might do better in warmer waters, while pollock and crab might fare worse. Johnson says short-term ocean warming events like El Nino or the blob could preview the long-term effects of climate change on fisheries.
If 50 years from now the long-term ambient temperatures are the same as they were last year during a short-term event, you can see how stocks reshuffle themselves and some prosper and some diminish.
Johnson says so far observable impacts of long-term climate change on Alaska's fisheries have been relatively mild. Commercially important fish species are prospering, while sport and subsistence resources are within normal ranges. Exceptions like the sweeping decline of Chinook salmon could be tied to climate change or ocean acidification, but the research isn't there yet. And Johnson says seeing Alaska's future is as easy as looking south.
You want to know what Alaska's going to be like 100 years from now? Well, look at Washington, because the temperatures are warmer there, and, you know, if nothing changes, eventually we're going to get a similar kind of long-term temperature increase here.
Johnson says fishermen deal with change all the time. The fishing industry is constantly adapting, from market collapses to advances in technology or shifts in resource management. Johnson says that flexibility has primed them so they can adjust to climate change. For Alaska's Energy Desk, I'm Zoe Sobel in Unalaska.
And I'm Angela Denning. This wraps up KFSK's Midday Magazine. Thanks for listening.